What is good, everyone, and welcome back to the Nostalgia Perception Podcast. My name is Taylor, aka Nostalgia. Joining me is As Told by Zoe. What's good, my guy? Nice to see you. Also joining me is K Likes Everything. How are you doing today?
I'm doing great now that I've yelled at you for last week's episode.
Yeah. If you have not, see, I can't even plug it.
I will. No, let's plug it. If you saw last week's episode on YouTube, you will notice something. My hair looks like spaghetti noodles. And it's because sometimes, you know, Taylor will post clips of us on the internet, and sometimes he doesn't. It had been quite some time since he had posted us. So I thought I was safe. I thought I could be a little crusty, and I shouldn't have. And I shouldn't have, because now I'm ugly on the internet forever. And that's fine. And if you don't think I'm ugly, thank you, but...
Oh my god.
I had to yell at him for like 5 minutes. I was like, how dare you? How I thought that we were friends.
Yeah, I guess...
But go watch it. It's a good episode, even if my hair looks like...
Yeah, yeah. If you haven't listened to last week's episode, please do that. It is the start of our 10-part Miyazaki... movie review analysis, or just like our stuff about Ghibli movies in general. And so
there's a word for that. There's a word for like what we're doing. It's not an analysis.
Retrospective.
Something like that.
We're reviewing something like that happened in the past. We're not reviewing a new thing. It's a retrospective.
Fair enough. So our Hayao Miyazaki retrospective. So I will say this. Welcome to part two, episode two of Miyazaki Magic. Today we are going to be talking about Castle in the Sky. It is in the background of Zoe's room. No ads this time, we hope.
It's paused.
It's paused
for safety.
For honestly, I feel like even with this might end up hitting me with the copyright flag. I don't think so. Honestly, I mean, for those that can't see, I have Free Rent in the background, which is just like a calming-ish show. It's in the early episodes, so like there's a lot of slice of life happening in the background. Mm-hmm. So like maybe it'll be fine. Hopefully we're fine. Maybe like if I put half my head in front of the TV, maybe I won't be able to get hit with a copyright infringement. But we'll just see what happens. All right.
Yeah.
So I guess starting off, as far as the Castle in the Sky movie, I think what I decided to do with the list in general, for those that are kind of like trying to figure out how we're doing it, because at first I was like, oh, you do it in chronological order. But I think that kind of got messed up with the fact that we started with Princess Mononoke.
Yeah.
I think it's just because the most recent, like they remastered it and put it on IMAX theaters. So yeah, we kind of had to talk
about
it.
Good timing.
Yeah.
Yeah, great timing. But I wanted to do Castle in the Sky next. I feel like I wanted to do like newer-ish or classic, do some old ones, older one, and then kind of like space out the classics in between some of the older ones. Like,
yeah,
like Howl's Moving Castle is next week. And I feel like if we had front-loaded all of the ones, like done all like the bangers on the front end and gotten to like the other ones later, I feel like it wouldn't have been a great like mix of episodes. So
yeah,
just kind of making sure we have a good flow of good episodes when it comes to better, like more notable Miyazaki movies versus the ones that kind of slip under the radar. So this is one of those ones I feel like kind of slips under the radar when it comes to Miyazaki's movies and his bias of work. And I think I started with you, Kayla, last week, so I'll start with Zoe. Initial thought, you don't have to spoil anything yet because we'll kind of get into some stuff, but like initial thoughts on Castle in the Sky.
I had seen this once before. I even saw it in theaters. And I didn't really know what to expect. So the first time I was kind of underwhelmed. Actually, a really funny anecdote of the time I saw it in theaters. When the title card shows up, the name of the castle shows up right before it.
Mm-hmm.
Laputa. But this is Miami.
Correct.
And
I have the same note.
Everyone speaks Spanish.
Yep.
So when the name of the castle first shows up, no one has said the name of the castle. It's just text. Everyone read it as La Puta.
Sí, señor.
So everyone, like, there was, it wasn't uproarious laughter. It was just kind of like everyone looked at each other going, what? Like a little chuckle. Like
that's what I did.
That's funny.
But yeah, I was a little underwhelmed. But then the second go around, I kind of, like, I knew what was going to happen. So I paid attention more to how the story was told. And obviously Ghibli aesthetics, but it's more like this, out of all his movies, I feel like this is his least mystical because yes. It's steampunk.
Yeah. Or it's steampunk-y. Yeah, it's super down to earth.
Yeah.
Instead of like, instead of like magic, it's more about technology.
There's only one magic element.
And it's more just like, oh, this is what this stone can do. So we're going to make tech out of it. Like, yeah. That's what it is. Yeah. Also, kind of one of his quote unquote scarier movies. And we can get into that later, but like there's a specific scene with the robot that it's not like hee hee ha ha we're breaking out. It's kind of terrifying if you like put yourself in the shoes of not only the side characters but the main character. What's her name, Sheeta. When you put yourself in the shoes of Sheeta.
When you put your Sheeta shoes on, yeah.
Yeah, it's pinched myself. It's just terrifying. But I liked it. I think I gave it a 3.5. It's like 7 out of 10. It's good. I don't know what's missing, but it is good. I do like it.
More magic.
Yeah.
I kind of like that it's not magic.
I gave it a 3. I think what's missing for me is that I'm used to it being so mystical, magical. So that's the element that's gone for me. But I don't think that the story needs it. I just feel like that's where my heart goes when I watch a Ghibli film. So there was that longing for it. But it's a good film.
Honestly. Yeah. Well, Kaylee, if you want to have your initial thoughts, because you kind of started with it, you can go ahead.
Yeah. Without giving too much away. So I had also seen clips of this movie as a child. I did not remember a lot of it. So seeing it now as an adult was very fun. I had more fun than I thought I would. The one scene that had stuck in my brain that didn't mean a lot to me as a kid but meant a lot to me now was when the two guys were having like the buff off.
Oh yeah.
It was perfect. Perfect in every way. So funny. So good. And when I was younger, I saw it in English, but seeing it as an adult, I watched it in Japanese. And the only thing that I'll say is immediately based off of like a laugh and based off of like the, I don't know what they're called, but like the questioning sounds like, huh? Oh, like the mm-hmm. I knew immediately the voice actor was Luffy and I looked it up and I was so happy. And hearing him say several times, like, I'm never going to be a pirate. I'm like, you're right. You're the king of the pirates, not just a pirate. So, I had a good time. It was nice to revisit. And I think that this movie is overlooked a lot in the Ghibli world. So I'm glad we're giving it some attention today.
It's kind of a cult movie because a lot of industry people like it, but not.
Yeah.
Fans. Right. 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 Right.
I got you. For me, I gave it a 3.5. I think I gave it 3.5.
Okay.
And that was mostly just because I think what happened is, I think starting off with Princess Mononoke kind of set the expectation that I have for all those movies.
Fair.
And not that I think that Castle in the Sky didn't deliver on any of the expectations. It just wasn't the same. And I feel like what I need to avoid in this episode series is like comparing Castle in the Sky or comparing any of the Ghibli movies to previous Ghibli movies that I've watched, mm-hmm. I guess, and just kind of treat it as like a standalone thing. But what I will say about Castle in the Sky is that what I think was missing was like a big, like bombastic fight, like culminating in like this big conclusion. Because honestly, while I don't hate the way that it ended with Sheeta and all that kind of stuff, and like them figuring out the stuff about the castle and all that kind of stuff. I don't hate how it ended, but I do think that it took a while to get there, and like there wasn't a lot of like crazy big crescendo moments that happened in that final like fight type with Sheeta, Pazuzu, and was it Margel or his name was?
The other king.
Yeah, the other Laputian.
Yeah, the other Laputian.
I forgot his name.
Matsu.
It's like Mar, not Markel. That's not how it's not it
Markel.
Like Markel.
it's Muska.
Yes.
Muska.
Okay. Muska.
In Japanese,
Miska,
it's
Musuka. Mickey Mouse.
played by Mark Hamill in English.
Oh.
Yeah, I noticed that the voice. Okay, yes, I'll say that. Another random British voice actor. Why is Sheeta's voice actor British?
Yeah, Sheeta.
Yeah.
In the English version, that doesn't make any sense.
Because it's the 80s. Well, actually, fun fact, this was dubbed by Disney in the 90s.
That's the connection.
And it's fucking... Everyone was like, oh, British is so soft and it makes you sound smart. So, yeah. A lot of these... Well, and since I already mentioned it, fun fact. Disney... A lot of these movies are like under the Disney belt because they were distributed by them. Mm. I think, if I'm not mistaken, when Spirited Away won an Oscar, Disney got one because of it.
Mm.
And then for some reason now they're distributed by Warner Brothers. Don't know what happened there. But I know Disney was like, oh, yes, we like this funny Japanese cartoon.
You sounded like Dexter from Dexter's Laboratory for a second. DD, look at this funny Japanese cartoon. And get out of my laboratory.
But yeah, I guess like when it comes to the voice actress for Sheeta, I think part of me was like, oh, well, maybe since the Laputian people aren't really there anymore, they might have had a British accent. So boom. But then the reveal that Muska is also Laputian. I was like, well, that just kind of throws it out the window.
Right.
But yeah, treating it as its own standalone thing, I think it was, it's a great movie. I think there are a couple of things that I wish were a little more explored in terms of certain characters that we can get into later. And then certain plot points that I felt like were really, really cool and were mentioned early. And then I didn't really get much of an answer, but like it wasn't expanded upon in the way that I wish that it was. Specifically, and I kind of go into this real quick, specifically, Pazuzu and his father. Mm-hmm. And
right.
Starting with characters, like I love Pazuzu's character. I thought he was phenomenal. I thought he's his kind of, because what is he, like 10, 11?
Yeah, they're youngins.
They're young. I think they're like 10 and 8. Like they're little.
And so Pazuzu, he acts his age, but he acts a little more mature, but then you see moments where he actually acts his age. And I think that kind of makes him a good.
How are you saying his name? Are you saying it with a T?
Well, in the English version, they say Pazuzu.
Yeah.
Oh, okay. Because in Japanese, they just say Pazuzu. So,
but it looks like Pazuzu. But I guess like the way that English actors were enunciating his name, they say it is.
Every time you've said it, I'm like, is there a T or am I hearing things?
So I can change it because Pazuzu. So that's what I had said it at first when like I saw his name on the little.
Yeah.
Like on the intro, on the information thing. Yeah. So yeah, for Pazuzu as a character, he definitely acts his age. He comes off as very mature because, you know, he lives by himself and he has his own, like, works in the mines. In my notes, I wrote down, where are this child's parents at? I was like, where are his parents?
We wrote some similar notes.
And then I wrote, where are this child's parents in all caps? And then I amended my own note later on when they tell you his father passed away, and I go, oh.
Yeah. Yeah, that's so sad. I'm checking the points off as we're kind of like talking about them on my notes app. But one of the things, just thinking about Pazu's father, Studio Ghibli, I guess I hadn't noticed it, and maybe it is a trend and I haven't paid attention, but it happened in Princess Mononoke and then it happened in this one. The use of complete silence is so unsettling. So when Pazu's in the sky and he's in that rain, thunder, cloud thing that's happening and sees his father, and there's flashes of like lightning, but absolutely no sound going at all. I had such a panic, and I'm like, it's doing the thing again that it did when I looked at the deer god, where I'm like, I shouldn't be breathing because there's like a ghost nearby or something. Like,
yeah.
They do it so well. And now I'm trying to, like, I don't think that ever happens in Ponyo, because I saw Ponyo pretty recently. But I'm like, what other films, what other Studio Ghibli films are they using that feeling in?
That is just the mind of a good composer. One thing that I didn't talk about in Mononoke, which I probably should have, because I think the score is so fucking good in that movie, but also in this movie, Joe Hisaishi does, if I'm not mistaken, every Miyazaki movie. And he is so...
if not most.
So talented.
Yeah.
Every one of his... I love the score for Mononoke, Nashka, The Boy and the Heron. He himself is a storyteller. Like,
yeah. Yeah. He's just saying it through music.
Not only is he like, yes, I'm going to breathe life into the scene with my music, I'm going to let scenes breathe by themselves when they need to.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
And like that is just, and I get it. Everyone who's listening and is probably like, oh, Hans Zimmer is the GOAT. Best to ever do it. I get it. He's done a lot. He did The Lion King, which is fucking fantastic. Gladiator and Pirates of the Caribbean. He is good. Expand your mind. Get on Joe Hisaishi. Get on Ludwig Göransson. Get on Trent Reznor, Atticus Ross. Get on some, like, yeah, get on some shit. Yoko Shimomura, who does video games. Just really good.
His screen kind of glitched, so it looks like that. Like, it,
I like, threw a piece of paper.
Okay,
I feel like he really threw something.
Yeah. It went really fast, but I don't know if you guys have seen that trend. It's like, it's called bunny anger. So, it's when people like stomp or like slap something really fast, because when bunnies are upset, they just pat down real quick. So it looked like he was going like. Like, I'm upset.
That was funny. And again, like, just to kind of go off what you guys said, the landscapes coupled with the soundtrack, I think that's just like a staple.
Yeah.
Is you're going to get a great soundtrack that truly fits what the tone of the story is.
Yeah.
And like, you're going to get a great like landscape shot.
Yes.
To go with the great soundtrack.
And I love how they just let us enjoy the background sometimes. Like, if we were there and we were like looking out with them. Because when Pazu at one point plays the trumpet to, I guess, wake people up.
Yeah.
And as when the birds are coming out, a harp starts playing. My note was, the harp when the birds come out, wow, magic, in all caps. Because I was sitting on my couch and I was like, this feels like Snow White is calling to her birds right now. Like, it's so beautiful. And I don't know, it was very The Hills Are Alive type moment, because it's just the watercolor of the clouds rolling over these mountains, waking up the village. Nothing's happening. It's just a nice, slow little moment. I'm waking up too. We're waking up together.
Yeah.
It's so good.
So coming back to one of the points I was thinking about making was that the situation between Pazu and his father, right? And how I wish that was a little bit either expanded upon or told in a different way, where like you see all the aviation equipment and you see like the newspaper clippings and you see the picture that Pazu shows to Shita about his dad and why he, like he said, he was a he flew and he took the only picture ever of Laputa, and he was trying to tell everybody that it was real and that kind of stuff, right? I wish there was a situation in which the father story and the issue with the military was connected, because I feel like that would have given Pazu more of an incentive to actually go find Laputa, in addition to him wanting to help Shita. That makes sense.
Yes.
Yes, Kayla.
Yeah. I always say Laputa. I can't say I always say Laputa wrong. Okay. Laputa, Skypiea is the same to me. That's how I kept seeing it. There's like this world that people are looking for. It's technology is better than what we've got down here. There are a lot of parallels. So I don't know if Oda was inspired later on in the future, but it felt a lot like Skypiea to me. So yes, I wish we would have gotten more of it, because like you mentioned earlier, Taylor, it happens so much later in the movie that we only get
that one scene where I thought was super dope. I was
beautiful. I wanted more robots. I wanted the birds on the robots covered in moss with the giant thing that we can't read, which is basically like the stone that Robin reads.
Poneglyph.
Crazy.
Like the poneglyph.
The poneglyph. Yeah. Exactly. So it was just giving me Skypiea all over again. And I just wanted more time in the sky. But you're up there for 2 seconds and then the military's there and you don't really get to do a whole lot. But the build of the landscape is very similar. And we just don't get enough time there.
So
yeah,
Laputa doesn't give me Skypiea. It gives me... Have either of you seen Prometheus?
Not one time. In years.
So the whole point of Prometheus is like it's a prequel to Alien.
Yes.
And the biggest theme for Alien is who made us. And in Prometheus they go to the planet of our creators, and then it's all this like this used to be a utopia, what happened? They were so smart. And then if you find out that our creators wanted to kill us, blah, 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 whatever.
Yeah.
Now, Laputians don't want to kill people on Earth. What happened was, again, whoa, Miyazaki environmentalism movie. Who would have thunk?
Right.
But they did have a utopia in the sky, and they were this the smartest, basically the smartest group of people on Earth.
Yeah.
But what happened? Industrialism and taking advantage of what you got.
Yep.
And violence. Resources. And that is exactly why they came down to Earth, because they said it's too much up here. People are going to get their hands on the wrong stuff and use it. Like Muska. Muska's only thing was like, it was a floating city and it was the most powerful country in the world. Like that's all he cared about.
Right.
Yep.
So every like time. not only is like the story of it symbolic, but the design of Laputa itself, where the top is this giant tree, or this town was full of nature and the robots were the one that were taking care of the nature. That's why you see the one that's still alive. Like he's friends with the animals and he's leaving flowers. But under the part that Muska cares about. Muska doesn't even see the top. All Muska cares about is the power and what he can do with this technology. And that's why the bottom of it is so, like, the vines or the roots of the trees create this weird, like, veiny organism, and he's ripping these roots and it looks so dark. It's a lot it's a lot of visual storytelling.
I do want to come back to that theme. I keep jumping back to characters. Can I just say that him revealing himself to be Laputian was kind of, I wasn't a fan of that late in the movie.
I think it could have been done way better
if he had revealed himself to be Laputian maybe midway through the movie. Like when he first captures Sheeta, and then you kind of figure out why exactly he wants to like go to the Forbidden City and like go and like, you know, conquer it, I guess.
Yeah.
Like, because obviously you know that he's working for the government and they want whatever energy source that place is. You find that out very early, right? Yeah. You do from him and plus the general. I forgot the general's name. But I feel like if we had gotten information that he was Laputian earlier, then him, instead of like, because I know we talked about villains being kind of multifaceted, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
He's not multifaceted as a villain. No, he's just an evil basic person.
Yeah.
He's very basic in his villainy, I guess.
Yeah, but the trope that he's running into is not uncommon. So I didn't feel like, yes, it could have been done better, but I think the timing of its reveal is kind of guiding you to being like, obviously he's involved in the government because he's trying to get close so that he can get up there and then reveal like, haha, I was one of these people along. I'm a king. I belong up here and all this is mine. It could have been better because I think he's a weak character and honestly like a pretty weak villain. Like, the military is more of a villain than he is. But it's okay. I'm not in it for him. I'm in it for the robot.
When they started crawling out on all fours, that is nightmare fuel. Again, I'm just going to keep ticking off.
We're going to keep coming back.
Like, you're making a list of Miyazaki nightmare fuel. The robots on all fours?
I agree.
Hell no.
That thing, It was. I forgot how scary that scene was as a child. And also, I was expecting, because the inside of the robot is made of organic life. Like, it's squishy. Mm-hmm. It's fleshy inside. And I was half expecting for his foot to, like, reattach. But I'm glad it didn't. I thought that him being, like, broken crawling around was much more interesting. But how, as it was remembering its mission, it adapted and like grew its wings and stuff. But yeah, crazy, crazy, just visuals. And I like, and for a second, I'm like, oh, why is she just scared? The robot's so cute. And then I was like, I get it. I'd also be scared.
I don't even think it is cute.
Oh, I think the robot's cute.
Nah, it is like this no mouth, soulless, three-eyed thing, which it's supposed to be. It's a great design. I think it's designed amazingly. I don't think it's cute. I think it's striking.
I think when it's covered in moss, it reminds me of Bastion from Overwatch. So I keep thinking that a little birdie is going to be his friend. And maybe in that mode, it's softer. So maybe that's why I like associate it with cute. But yes, absolutely. Just seeing it with its long fingers on the ground, like, yes, it is supposed to make you feel some type of way.
Yeah, and I'll say when I was watching, and this very well could not be a comparison, like this person could not have been influenced by this at all, but when I was watching the initial, like when Sheeta first meets the robot for the first time, the one that's like dysfunctional, it reminded me a lot of like the last maybe 40 minutes of the Iron Giant, where like he's like kind of he's in that evil mode because it's the dent's on his head anymore, but he's still trying to protect the boy. I forgot the boy's name.
Hogarth.
Hogarth, yes, where that's what it reminded me of, like that final scene where he's getting like where the robot's getting bombarded with shells and he's
right. Yeah, like, he stops saying, they're peaceful unless provoked, right? So yes. When it wakes up, its mission is to make sure that Sheeta can get back to the place. I can't say it right. It makes me so angry. My brain stops me every time.
In but Japanese, do they say Laputa? Do they say the U?
I can't remember now because every time I saw it, I was like, Laputa, Laputa. Like, it every time, that's just how I said it. Like, vamos a Laputa. But, yeah, so it is kind of like the Iron Giant where it's like if you shoot a gun at it, it overrides the safety and it shoots mm-hmm. a gun back. The fire was really cool. Like that, like a single robot did a lot of damage.
I know. And then just like the animation style where like they doing the explosions.
Yeah.
Like any of the explosions were like when he shot a little laser at the bottom ring and it just like lavas up and then explodes. And I was like, oh, that's just such a cool little animation moment.
Yeah, because like I think you mentioned earlier, this one doesn't have a lot of fighting. And the fighting that it does have is just like you throw a few punches, like some of the military, like, you know, put up arms, but it's not anywhere near as striking or stunning as Princess Mononoke was. But the robot tries to make up for that, I feel.
Yeah.
Does the robot have a name?
How did you... I don't think it does. They just call it a robot.
Okay.
They do not try to humanize it at all until...
No, they don't. I thought that was pretty interesting.
Until the sky, yeah.
Yes.
Until it gets up there. I thought that was cool how, like, initially you think... Obviously, you're getting the information from... what is his name again? I can't... Maruka? Maruka?
Muska.
Muska.
I'm not going to... I feel like I'm going to butcher
it. It's okay. We're having problems today.
You only really get like the information initially from Muska,
mm-hmm.
where it's like, oh, this is a robot and it does boom, boom, boom. And it's this, what, this, that, and the third. And you're like, okay, well, these are just like these creatures or, because it looks like organic material inside the robot. So you're like, okay, these are kind of like creatures that just protect Laputa.
Mm-hmm.
And then when you get there and you see like the big long slab, I think it's probably like an obituary for the robots or from obituary for like the people that used to live there.
Yeah.
I'm assuming. You see the one that's still working, like with all the moss on it and the animals kind of going around, so like that. Interesting how none of the wildlife look like in the most realistic. How do I say this? In one of the more realistic movies of Miyazaki's when it comes to these movies, I guess.
But some of the animals are shared because the little electric thing, creature thing that crawls on the robot is also in Noshka. So I'm like, oh,
the horses are like little things. The horses that Sheeta walks out with when you see the flashback, you're like, those aren't or the cows. I was like, those, what are those things?
yeah. I kept feeling like the polyglyph. That's what I'm gonna call it.
The polyglyph.
I kept thinking that it was like a goodbye message because a lot of the time when people, you know, in these types of movies or shows or even real life, who knows, when people are saying goodbye to a creation they've made that they don't want to let go of, it hurts them to destroy it. So they're taking away their responsibility to destroy it, but they're like, we're going to leave and hopefully you treat it better than we do, or you figure out how you can keep it alive without people, you know, using it for evil. That's what I kept feeling was going to happen in that section. And I wanted there to be a little more of that. But it was still cool.
Yeah, still cool. I guess final thing about characters. How did you guys feel about Sheeta as a character? Because she, something that I guess to me at least was when I was watching was this, while yes, she's the main crux of the movie and like a lot of the plot moves forward with her, I feel like you spend a lot more time with Pazu than you do with Sheeta.
Yeah.
It's it's like this 50-50 thing for me, because I kind of like the fact that the movie starts in the middle of her story. Mm-hmm. It's not like, yeah, it's not like everything was calm one day until the fucking government got me. No, she's already with the government and they're stealing her. I guess it's this way of like trying to make her more mysterious, like Laputa, like, oh, she came from this different place. Whoa. But there's still too much out there. Like, yeah, we kind of figure out where she grew up. I would still like to know a little more. I would like, yeah. I would like, I feel like a weird thing about this movie is a lot of the characters are a little weak. It's just, it's more about the symbolism and the story than it is about the character writing.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
It, which is, mm-hmm, which is odd, because I feel like Miyazaki's pretty good at that.
Yeah. I feel like his best written character is Dola. Which, yes, I know I'm going back to characters again, but Dola is his best written character in there, and she is awesome. She falls into that category where the pirate.
Yes.
She falls into that category of a villain that's not really a villain, where you get like, I think that, I guess this is going to be like a staple from Miyazaki's works,
yeah,
where there is a villain in the initial stages that is not actually the villain, and you find out the villain way later.
Yeah.
So I think it's really cool. Yeah. But again, Dola is one of those interesting characters where, like, yes, she's a pirate and she's looking to steal the crystal from them, but eventually, in her quest to steal and even like get stuff from Laputa, she helps and genuinely cares for Shita and Pazu.
Yeah.
And so I thought she was a great, she's probably the best written character in that movie.
I agree.
For sure.
Yeah. She's the funniest and she's the most well-rounded for sure. I got a little emotional at the end when she's like, she's going back cause she goes, oh, we're going to lose all that treasure. But you know that once she sees, man, that's a hard sentence to say. Once she sees Shita, she gets emotional and they have this like really beautiful hug. Also, something with that Ghibli, I know the anime does it as well, but I feel like Ghibli does it really well with non-facial body emotions. They use hair a lot to show emotion. Like it kind of like stands on end or it shivers up. I don't know why, but when a character displays that, I can feel it. Like, I can feel my hair, like, standing on edge, like, when I'm excited to, like, see somebody. So when she sees her and her little pink braids, like, kind of move up because she's breathing in, it was very cute. Did a good job.
Yeah. I guess moving into, I guess, major themes, Zoe, you already kind of, like, touched on the environmentalism thing. What did I write? I wrote something in my notes about it. Where was it at? Oh, I did. I did say fun thing about like the military and just like the overall themes in that regard. I said when they're in that big shootout in the town to like get the to find Pazu and Shita, I said straight up ruining infrastructure for the sake of greed. Mm-hmm. And then I put, but that was Dola's situation.
Yeah.
And then I put in all caps, and here comes the army making things worse. Oh man. I did say that it, like, you know, in addition to the environmentalism theme, there's a lot of themes of like anti-war. There's a lot of anti-war sentiments in there in terms of, I can't remember who says it, but somebody talks about how what they're doing for the sake of power is wrong.
Yeah.
Right.
And like they show it through the military officers and like the different people involved with the government, how they're so adamant that like there's something in Laputa that could help them become one of the world's powers.
Yeah.
And I was just like, you couldn't have been more obvious if you tried. Miyazaki.
Yeah. But also he talks a lot about how
the war sentiment.
Yeah. But he also talks about how war creates jobs.
Yeah.
And how these people have their economy because of war. they don't necessarily like it, but they all like, there's a community there and they're all ride or die for each other, because they all work together in these very dangerous, very unhealthy conditions. And Miyazaki, again, he's talking about how two things can be the same, right? It's like war, bad, but war creating jobs for this rural community.
Also, a little more specific than just war, something that hits close to home for Japan, and they have made a lot of media about this, very prominently Godzilla, but nuclear power.
Yeah.
Not just power, but basically when Muska starts controlling Laputa, he has a nuke.
Right.
Yeah, he legit, yeah.
Right.
He has a nuke, and it's kind of showing like, oh, nuke bad, huh? Yeah. Nuke fucking scary.
Nuke really bad.
Nuke bad.
And where should we put it? To space.
Yeah.
Like when he tears through those vines and you see the crystal, and I was like, yeah, like this is, I like, that's just a WMD, that's all that is.
Yeah,
for sure. And then there was also like the idea, I think anti-war and anti-imperialism kind of go hand in hand with this, with the theming of this movie when it comes to like the military coming in and just like thinking they own the place, blowing shit up, going in and looting all of the gold. And I was like, man, y'all can... I was like, Miyazaki is literally just saying, yeah, this is bad. Okay. Yeah. We're just gonna put it right in your face.
Yeah.
What else did I say? Oh, I know you wanted to mention Dola and her sons and how they treated Shita in that movie. I know you wanted to bring that up because we did talk about it in the chat before we started recording.
Andre, you want to go
first? Here's my thing, though, and you can definitely go on the soapbox about it, because it is weird. It is weird. But narratively, I know narratively why the boys started acting like that. It is weird, but narratively, I know why.
I think it's a little... Here's what I think. I think it is a joke that did not even age well. I think it's a joke that didn't land well. Because
A thing
I noticed about this movie specifically, in the beginning, it's one of his most lighthearted films. Everyone's kind of a little goofy, and like the buff off is like very funny.
The buff off is funny as fuck,
and,
man.
It's and so funny. Dola's kids, even after this weird section of the movie, are still funny. It's like a good pirate always listens to his mom. Like they're very childlike. They think like kids.
Yeah.
But then you can make like they think like kids, so they're gonna like this kid. No. Maybe we don't have to do that.
Yeah.
We don't
have
to do that.
I think, again, joke just didn't land.
Yeah.
So I guess to explain what we're actually talking about, just in case for those that are listening or watching might not fully remember, there's a point in the movie towards the back end where Shita and Pazu are on Dola's ship, and they are about to go try to find Laputa before the military do. And before that, there is a point where Dola and her sons had taken over Pazu's shack and were eating a bunch of food in there. And at one point, Dola says to her children that they need to find somebody like Dola. They find you a nice girl like me. That's like me. And then she also mentions in the same breath that her and Shita are similar because they're compassionate and kind.
Yeah.
Right?
Mm-hmm.
And so fast forward to the back end of the movie, Shita is in the kitchen area and she's cleaned it out, and she is even before that, there's where Dola hands Shita some clothes to wear because she gotta look the part of a pirate, right?
And that's where please. Okay, so the thing is that like at the beginning of the movie, they're not paying attention to her, right? Because they're on a mission to get Shita. Then Dola says that thing, and the first click happens where they're like, oh, I should get married someday. I need a nice girl. I need a nice girl like my mom. They see Sheeta again, and they're like, oh, she's so nice. And there was, like, no correlation yet.
No.
And then when she wears Dola's clothes, a very Freudian thing happens, and they're like, nice girl, will wait till older, reminds me of mom, wearing mama's clothes. And I had to write it down that, like, before things were happening, I'm like, there is a bad vibe with the grown men on this ship and Sheeta. Uh-huh. She's a child. And when they all just start going in to, like, help her in the kitchen, I'm like,
yeah,
she's in the kitchen. She cooks for you like your mom did. And she's in your mom's clothes, but she is a child. But y'all are going to wait. And the guy that was waiting in front of her door, like, checks himself like you would before a date. It was bad.
Oedipus? Is that it you? Was,
no. Oedipus is real. It, oh my God. He bombed through the doors. Like, he didn't, like, knock and walk. He got a grenade.
Oh, and yeah, it didn't click at first. What was funny is it didn't click at first. And until more of them started coming in.
Right.
Because at first I thought it was just them being, you know, like, lovable idiots, help Sheeta to be nice. Because the one guy comes in and he's like, do you need some help? Boom, boom, boom. And he looks over and it's this other guy peeling potatoes, like, what are you doing here? And I go, hold on.
What is happening here?
Something's not right here.
Yeah, no. As soon as she put on the clothes and they were all kind of looking through the kitchen window, mm-hmm. I'm like, we've entered into a strange territory. Yeah. And what's so funny is that, like, typically Studio Ghibli is so good about staying age appropriate with other age appropriate characters, right?
Yeah.
So it was just weird for me to see this. And I think it's like what Andre said, like, it was a joke. Like, oh, wouldn't it be funny? But it's not funny, and no one checked them. So it didn't land, and just got progressively weirder.
Yeah, because again, like he said, no, go ahead, Zoe, my fault.
Well, I was going to say, it could also be this weird thing where, like, maybe, I'm just trying to throw them a bone here.
Mm.
Maybe Dola's sons are like 16. Right, and you would think
they do the anime thing
where they look like
buff off with the bearded man is 16.
I know what you're saying, but have you seen Tokyo Revengers?
No,
those are full grown.
You saw Kuroko's basketball though.
Full grown adults,
16.
Full grown adults, but they're like, yeah. I'm in middle school. Which is, it's still weird. I'm not saying that it's not weird. I'm just trying to get into
the
mind.
Internet?
Because, like you said, Miyazaki and Ghibli usually aren't like that. So
yeah,
why would they be like that? They're one time. It's so, like, I don't want to believe it.
Kayla is Googling this. It's going to be so funny.
I am Googling.
Watch, they're 40.
Don't say that.
Please, God, no.
Okay, so first of all, Pazu is 12. I felt he was younger.
Little boy.
Well, one is saying 12, but other one is saying Pazu's 14 and Sheeta's 13. I feel like they're making excuses to make it closer to how old the other people are.
They're on to us.
They're on to us. They know what's happening. How old are y'all?
As she's looking that up, funny casting in English, Pazu's voiced by James Vanderbeek.
What else does he play? Because that name sounds
familiar.
He's
Dawson's Creek.
Yes. I was like, I feel like I've heard that voice before.
Just a random, I think it's funny. He did his best.
How funny that I didn't know this, the mustache man that works for Dola is her husband. I never caught that. Yep.
Yeah, the old guy.
Yeah, I did not know that was.
Yeah, because she goes. I'll buy you a new ship, you crybaby.
Okay. First son, the buff one, 30 years old.
Oh, no.
Okay, second son, 25. And third son is 20.
Oh, boy.
What'd you say? She was 13 in one of them?
Mm-hmm. And that's the oldest. And guess the oldest what is 13.
The age of consent used to be in Japan.
No. We're not doing that.
I'm not defending it. I'm saying it's gross.
Yeah,
but
for sure.
That's probably why they thought in Japan, haha, funny joke.
Funny joke.
When did this movie come out?
In the 80s, brother.
It came out.
Geez. Not to mention that in the fucking 80s and 90s, everyone was on some shit. Even America. What's the fucking movie? Have you seen Blank Check?
1986.
I have seen Blank Check.
Yeah. Okay, when the kid is talking to the girl like, will you wait for me? And she's like, maybe, and then kisses the kid.
Oh yeah.
And he's like 11.
There's like another movie. Oh,
Big.
I hate how
with Tom Hanks.
Yeah. I have where like this one girl, this one lady's like comes in with like video games and like McDonald's and like a bra and panties.
Yes.
Like a child.
And
what movie is that?
It was a TV show. I did research on this because I was like, this cannot, because obviously fucking Grums, right wing grifter, posted that video and was like, make gaming great again. I looked it up and it's the kids to save, you know, the production. It was a TV show and that was the kid having a horny dream because he's going through puberty. So it didn't actually happen. It is kind of gross that they had that grown ass woman in her bra and panties in front of the kid to film that.
Yeah, that's nuts.
But it's not, you know, Castle in the Sky, 30-year-old being like 13-year-old child wife.
The Spirit of the Lord is here.
Okay. A big reason why this movie ain't a 4 out of 5.
Right. Yeah. Right.
It's a 3.5. But I mean, three. Yeah. It's overall though, outside of that.
That part. Because it is a small part of the movie.
Yes, yeah. It's a joke that doesn't land. I think the humor and the tone of the movie, the first three quarters, are, I liked it. It doesn't take itself too seriously. And again, I know if this is the third time I'm mentioning it, the buff off was the funniest thing I've ever seen.
Not only is it the funniest thing you've ever seen.
Okay, here we go.
So, okay, I haven't had a freak off in like 2 minutes. Number one, it's very rare that anime characters have body hair or facial hair of any sort. Okay?
True.
They're typically shiny, hairless people. Which if that's your deal, go for it. I love a hairy man. So the fact that both of the men that are having the buff off are very masculine, very hairy. Great. Like, literally, like, little me could have never understood what glorious thing was happening. I also, again, with hair being a thing of movement, when Pazu's boss pops off his shirt and his apron, which is because he's working in an industrial underground mines, that thing is made of thick material, okay? I probably thicker than denim. He popped that thing, and then his like little mustache gets like, he's like proud. It's like a proud like puff. And not only are they buff, but so is the boss's wife. That woman is big.
Too big.
She's strong. She's a great mom. And she immediately is like, she had her mission. She's like, you're gonna get back there, you do what you gotta do. I'm gonna get out of pan and I'll beat somebody up.
Oh, she was ready to go.
She was ready to go.
She was ready
I really
to
like,
go.
I like that the whole town was kind of like, yeah, Pazu,
yes,
that's my boy.
Yep.
Even the train conductor was like, oh, look, the army, they'll help. And once the army guy was like, I'll shoot, he was like, and blows steam in his face.
Yes. Yeah, they're ready to go. They're ready to ride for Pazu and Shita. They didn't even know Shita. And they're like, yeah, we'll protect you. Yep. Yeah, I thought that was cool.
Correct.
But yeah, I just loved just the absurdness of the flex off, because they're just like, and they're just like punching each other super hard. And then it's just like they're smiling and joking, and here comes some random villager off the top rope. Just
yes.
Boom. And I'm yes. like, this is so
laughing
dumb.
About it too. Because they're like, yeah. man, when are we gonna get a chance to beat up someone from the army? Might as well be now. Yeah,
it was just playful testosterone in
yes.
the air.
It was very funny. It was just a fun little like moment. They had a lot of fun moments in the film, like even when Pazu jumps on like the train and the train conductor's like, oh, who's this little girlfriend you have?
Yeah,
like it was like very just, it was very sweet. Like the most of the movie is so silly.
Yeah,
you want to talk about the Rock Man?
Yes,
I knew.
Yes.
So what a thing I like about this movie is that the world is so big but feels lived in.
Yeah.
Yeah.
A detriment of that is that some characters you meet for 2 seconds.
And you want more.
Like the train conductor and Uncle Pom.
Yes, because, Uncle Pom.
Bro, Uncle Pom going like, I can't see well. Is that a goblin?
Yes.
and then a demon.
Yeah, and in Japanese it's a demon.
He goes, is that a goblin? And then Pazu says something and he goes, oh, is that the goblinette? Like a girl goblin. Like, I don't know. I thought it was so right. funny.
Also, Uncle Pom drops one of the hardest lines in the movie. He says, we come from the earth and to the earth we must return. And I was like, okay, well, obviously the big glaring environmentalism button got pushed in that scene. But like, again, he just said, be careful with the crystal and how powerful it is. You don't want it to fall in the wrong hands. And he's like, we must protect the earth because we come from it and we need to return to it once we die. And I thought that was such a cool line from somebody that's in the movie for two seconds.
Oh, you pulled a Kayla. it's also that he recognizes that he would fall to power if he had been left alone with it. And obviously he thinks that it should, you know, not that it should be his, but he knows the rocks the best because he spends so much time in the earth. But he's like, hey, get away from me because I'm very happy. I don't need more. I don't need power. But it was very much like the ring type moment. I will say that the scene with all the rocks lighting up and them like listening to the rocks was very Fern Gully coded for me. It just reminded me of like when what's the main fairy girl's name? I forgot her name, but she tells the human that shrink, she goes, can't you feel its pain? And all like the, you know, all of the trees kind of like light up and it's all communicating and talking and everything's alive. It gave me that feeling, especially because like in the scene where they go and they like dance in the water turns blue as you touch it in the same way that the rocks do. So yeah, very fun.
Yeah, super, super dope movie. Y'all have anything else on it at all? Yes, no?
The fact that the rock is called Ethereum, I was like, oh God. I was like, is this where the crypto bros got it? But no.
I that would be so lame if it did, but whatever.
My final notes, because I wrote them down, and I think we've checked off literally almost everything. My final notes were when I was watching and writing, I wrote in all caps, get Pazu out of the mines. Oh my God. my head's harder than my boss's fists. Is he being abused at work? Was my thought. And I get it because he needed to have a hard head for other things in the movie, but I'm like, Pookie, are they beating you up at work? Then it was, I love how a lot of the flying machines look like bugs. That's a constant in Ghibli films. It's that nature / industrialism vibe together. And then I was all mushy when he's like, he called Sheeta an angel. And I put, damn, I love soft love. And I want to cosplay Sheeta and Pazu one day with a future boyfriend. So, you know, listeners, maybe you saw me with my crusty spaghetti hair last week, but you're like, wow, she's so beautiful. My DMs are open if you want to cosplay with me.
Man, this is the second time that somebody has shot their shot with somebody on the podcast.
Mine wasn't real.
I mean, we made a whole clip out of it, though.
I know.
When was that?
It was really early in the pod.
I invited Valkyrae
to play.
I thought it was Pokimane. The whole time it was Pokimane.
Don't get it twisted. Valkyrae. That's my girl.
Who's that?
She's pretty streamer.
Oh, fun. Very fun.
I invited her to play Multiverses.
Yeah, it was like when Multiverses came out, he was like, hey, Valkyrae, you know. Multiverse just came out. If you're looking for a duos partner, like, I'm here.
And now that game is dead.
Yeah, it's dead now.
Well.
That's funny. What did I... There was one... Oh, I missed this part that I wanted to talk about.
Yeah.
The quote from the interaction between Dola and Sheeta when it comes to, like, female characters, which I thought was super dope, where she's like... Where Dola goes, what are you doing up there in the kite? And Sheeta goes, I'm going with him. And Dola goes, you can't do that. You're a female. That's a man's work. And Sheeta replies, but you're a female captain. I was like, that's hard.
Yeah.
I was like, that's so hard.
She goes, you're a female captain. Did you forget? She was trying to protect her.
Yeah, she was trying to protect her.
True.
Oh, yeah. Well, you're going to have to use the phone. And then, this phone?
Yeah. They have a great relationship.
So while Sheeta wasn't like super like a dominant presence, I guess, in the movie, I do think like that moment was awesome for her.
Yeah.
And I think that they do a good job. Again, given women characters, great writing.
Yeah.
Or great writing moments, at least, is just.
Studio Ghibli will always.
Always.
Always. I will always say I'm claiming the pirates as Hispanic because Dola just eavesdropping on the phone to the conversation, I'm like, my abuela would do that too. If my abuela found out I like a boy and she can hear me through the phone, she'd be on there all night. Ahí, con un cafecito de café, esperando that, like, for some tea, waiting for something to happen. So, in my heart, I know they're all Japanese, but I'm like, that's such a Hispanic thing to do. So I see
other two...
Y un nombre como Dola.
Dola. I'll say the two men in suits in Dola's crew, they're riding in the car with them. Those are just Dominican men, for sure.
There you go.
Those are Dominican men. They're dark skin. I was like, those are Dominican men.
Yeah. Give them un cigarrillo ahí. They're just on the clock.
So is that from everybody? Because I kind of wanted to talk about, real quick, with some small time, some, instead of music recommendations, some anime recommendations, because this season for anime is very stacked. To say it's stacked is like an understatement. There's so many shows coming out. I know me and Zoe have mentioned doing a Shinichiro Watanabe episode series. That would take a little bit longer because those shows are longer. It's not like a movie, but like Cowboy Bebop, Samurai Champloo,
Carol Space Tuesday, Dandy.
Space Dandy.
I do love.
And now Samurai Lazarus.
Michiko and Hachin, like that kind of, like those shows. Mm-hmm. And then now with Lazarus, which is his new show, which is literally just Cowboy Bebop light, but it's still good.
Is it actually?
Dude, like the jazz playing in the background during an action scene, the main character is like, the main character is like a suave goofball. Like it's like he's literally just Spike in a different font.
He knows the formula works. Formula.
Well,
yeah.
He didn't want to do that.
He didn't want to make this show. That's the thing.
I mean, he did because it's still his idea, but he wanted to make a goofier show, and Adult Swim was like,
yeah, they're like, no, buddy, give us another Bebop or you're fired.
We didn't like Space Dandy. We didn't like Space Dandy, even though you're stupid, because I really like Space Dandy.
Space Dandy's amazing. We need to do a video. We need to do an episode on Space Dandy. I think Kayla would like that.
I love that show.
Would like that show.
Okay.
What else? I know I text you guys in the chat. The show To Be a Hero X or To Be Hero X like that.
You mentioned that.
Is a Chinese anime that was brought over to China. Crunchyroll. They're making anime in China.
The liberals are making anime in China now. I saw a concerning film, a concerning documentary, Happy Feet.
And so we put tariffs on the penguins.
But it is it's a show that's in CG, like a 3D animated. It's super fluid and awesome, but at random times it changes its animation style to 2D. It is like the transitions are kind of seamless, and it's very just like, it's not clunky at all.
What's it called?
It's very, very cool. I think it's 2B A Hero X or 2B Hero X. I can't remember exactly what it's called. I'll say the dub.
Oh, I know exactly what the show is, because I'm kissing that main character with this, if he's age appropriate. I think he has to be. With those glasses. Mm-hmm. Oh my god, yeah, absolutely. The way that jumps, I've seen the commercial between 3D and 2D, it reminds me of Arcane.
Mm-hmm. In a way. Mm. Like the move, like the CG, the like animated movement is Arcane. Yeah. And then it flips to like a 2D style, and it's very, very, very cool.
Yeah. Super hot. 10 out of 10. That man's the bags under his eyes. Yeah. Sorry. Go.
But like the phenomenal first episode. Okay, the dub, I'll say the dub sucks. Oof. And it's the default thing they give you when you click on the show. So I think
it's default. Like,
so like what happens is, so I clicked on the show and it immediately opened to the English version. So here's the weird part, right?
Billy?
I watched it in Japanese with subtitles, but the problem is the Japanese is a dub because it's a Chinese show.
Of Chinese. Got it.
You see what I'm saying? So if they're speaking in Mandarin speaking in Chinese or speaking in Mandarin or whatever, I don't know if that was an option on the Crunchyroll language list.
I'm about to look. Because I think that you still can watch it in its original language unless Crunchyroll doesn't have the rights in its original Chinese language. Version?
So you're saying the Japanese dub sucks?
No, the English dub sucks.
Gotcha. Because it's got to be, Japanese it's being dubbed dub. Twice.
Yeah. What I'll say is, what's funny is, I think from my memory on the language thing, it says Japanese and then in parentheses, original. And I was like, that doesn't make any sense. No. I was like, it's clearly, you can clearly see the flaps don't line up.
The flaps is crazy.
Like the.
Really weird. I see that it is an Aniplex Billy Billy production.
Yeah.
Billy Billy
is Chinese.
But Billy Billy is China's YouTube.
Yeah. Mm.
So this is like a YouTube Red show.
Oh, don't say it like that.
I mean.
Yeah, but I mean, I didn't really. I mean, yeah, that's a.
I haven't seen it. I liked the style of it. What I will say is that the main character is giving me the same ick that Chizuru Mitsuhara gives me. Perfectly made in a lab to make girls go because this is the country that gives us a Hoyoverse. Every character that Hoyoverse makes is scientifically put in a lab to make people who are attracted to that gender go. So like he's too hot. He's too hot and I don't like it.
He's too hot. Yeah. But yeah, the first episode is a banger. Leaves on a cliffhanger. The character you saw in the trailer does not show up in that first episode. I'll tell you now.
I did look and I believe I changed it to Chinese. Because it's funny how in like the settings button, right? Every other language is written in English, but with the name. And then this one there on the bottom is in some
Chinese.
It's script. And I'm like, could could be Chinese letters. I believe they are. But that is what I'm going to put it as. And it looks, it seems to match up. So I'm, that's how I'll watch it. Watch all my other shows now are going to be like Chinese. I'll swap it back and forth, but
yeah, there's like a couple really good. Yeah, there's that one.
Lazarus, Yaiba.
Yaiba. I think Yaiba is an old but they're anime.
I think they're remaking it. Kayla,
they're
look
remaking
up,
a bunch.
Look up Yaiba 2025.
Yaiba.
Y-A-I-B-A.
The animation, the designs are very old.
Oh, this looks old.
But the animations are so fluid and it bouncy. Looks like it's so the new. It
I'm
looks
put,
so
is Yaiba
good.
A remake?
It was in Shonen Magazine Weekly from September 1988 to December 1993.
Yeah. The new one's called Yaiba Samurai Legend.
The original run in anime was from 1993 to 1994, 52 episodes.
Yeah, but they're saying it's a 30-year. It's a 30-year remake.
And he's just so, the main character looks so goofy.
Oh, but the original art is so cute.
Yes, I really like it. It kind of, yeah, the new
it reminds
art,
me of Ranking of Kings a little bit. A
little bit.
Which we need to watch that.
Yeah, is that
by the way,
back?
I mean, they've mentioned the season two. I know they've mentioned it before.
They're,
or like a movie at least.
Didn't they already do a season two?
I don't even know. Maybe.
They did.
All I know is that Kayla would ride for Boji.
He looked, the little king boy,
uh-huh.
He looks like Karopi, which
he's
means
he's deaf and mute.
Don't do anything for him.
You have to watch the show.
You have to watch the show now. You have to watch the show now. Oh my God. That's when we get done.
I know,
we
how, to, I know how to speak some sign language. I'll speak to him. Like,
when we get done
cute.
With Miyazaki, that's our next episode. It's gonna be
baby.
On Record Kings. He just speaks in inaudible, just ah, like that's all he speaks in. Yeah.
Why do you guys insist?
He's the best. No, he's the best. He's the best.
Putting me through.
Oh my God. Yeah, I put her through the mob psycho torture chamber.
I have
it's crazy that I'll watch like five in a row and then I'm like, I have to take a break.
I have to watch Ranking of Kings at least a little bit with you.
Yeah, for
because
sure.
Because you will be a wreck.
For sure.
I love that.
I think towards the end
why
of
can't
this,
we
this...
have a little funny hee hee ha ha sometimes? Like Dress Up Darling, huh?
Or it's watch a or watch like Golden Time or something. Some like older funny show.
We gotta watch
Golden Time. Cleanse the palate. At least.
I have a show to share with you guys because my brother and I just started it and we're burning through it way too fast. It's called. It's not Mystery Quest. It's called Mythic Quest. Mythic Quest.
Mm-hmm.
When I tell y'all, we are burning through these episodes. So Brittany Broski came out and she interviewed the guy who was in It's Always Sunny, and he made a show with Charlie Day, Mythic Quest, and it is so funny and so good. And if you're a creative working in corporate America, you will feel so seen and so heard. Every single time we finish an episode, I look at my brother and I'm like, I'm not ready for this to be over because what? I'm not going to care about something like this for a hot minute. It is phenomenal. And every episode that isn't about the main show, but like a background about like things that pertain to the show, but are not necessarily a part of the main storyline, have been phenomenal. They have hurt me in ways that I cannot begin to express. So if you guys haven't watched it, I highly suggest that you do.
Definitely will do that.
Yeah.
Also, Fire Force, new season. Yeah.
Ready.
Gotta get on that.
Yeah.
That will be, I guess, this 10-part series is going to take a while. So there's a lot of stuff on the back end that we can do in the meantime to get prepared for some of the other episodes that we want to do. So you guys got anything else or we're good?
I'm just ready to, for you all to see Howl's Moving Castle. Have you guys seen it before?
I've never seen
I've seen people go feral over the main love interest, but
this is new for the both of you?
Yeah.
Love that. Love that. Okay. I don't think it's going to be your favorite. I'm going to say that right now.
Okay.
But it is very good.
Okay. Because I feel like we should have an episode where we rank all of the ones that we've seen at the end of it.
And that would be great.
We're fighting a little bit.
I'm sure that we will.
Okay. Well, that's been everything for us. I've been Taylor, aka Nostalgia. Okay. As told by Zoe. K likes everything. We'll see you guys next time. Peace.
Bye.